Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Psychic Teachers Book Club. I'm your host, Samantha Fay.
And I'm Deb Bowen.
And I'm so excited to be back with you all this week as we're discussing, I think, just one of the very best books in New Age self-help spirituality, which is Louise Hayes's You Can Heal Your Life.
Can I just say I'm really glad to have you back?
Yes, thank you.
I felt very...
It's not easy to do this show on your own, is it?
Even though, you know, I could talk till the cows come home about the books I talked about for the past 2 weeks, but I like to have somebody to talk about them
with
live,
yeah.
You know. So, oh, gosh, I'm glad you're here. I love Louise Hayes, You Can Heal Your Life. This book changed my life.
Oh, I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Why don't we talk a little bit about... how this book came to be. It was published in 1984.
Yeah, which was just the beginnings of that New Age movement. It was right after a celestial event called the Harmonic Conversion. You probably don't remember that.
No, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I can. I can tell you that our lovely friend Granny Jean, the palm reader, and her husband Ralph, and our friend Joel, the stone expert, and a group of us all went out on the beach in the middle of the night to watch this conversion of a certain way that the stars were aligned, and the idea was that that was one of the demarcations of the beginning of the Age of Aquarius, and the idea was that if humanity would allow it to be so, we could move into a new level of community and peacefulness.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And that event sparked many books and had a quantum shift in thought, in the way people thought about their place in the cosmos.
That's really
cool. And
Louise
Hayes' book was one of those.
Well, from what I remember, she was working with the AIDS community.
She was, but even before that, she had had a horrible life.
Well, yes. Yeah.
I mean, gosh, you know, but yes, she was working with the AIDS community.
And she was really trying to help them to find a sense of inner strength and peace and solace.
Mm-hmm.
And what she kept seeing was this mind-body connection. That, you know, the AIDS patients who were healing some of their pain from childhood or from parental rejection, because a lot of the AIDS patients, you know, were members of the gay community who were dying alone because their family had rejected them.
Absolutely.
And she started to notice that the patients who were able to really love themselves through that process tended to have a more peaceful dying process.
Mm-hmm.
And so she started to really see this mind-body connection, and she started to do a lot of research and study on that. One of her mentors is Florence Scovel Shinn. If you have not heard of her, I really recommend that you guys check her out. She is a turn-of-the-century writer from the 1920s and 30s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And her most famous book is called The Game of Life.
Yes.
And so Louise Hayes read a lot about her, a lot of old metaphysicians. And she wrote You Can Heal Your Body. And she self-published that, and she would literally go from Unity Church to Unity Church selling this little tiny book. And it just kept taking off and kept taking off, and she would go to all these different AIDS groups, and she would just really teach them how to heal their body with love, with affirmations, with positive words and thoughts. And then that, all of that experience grew for her, and she expanded You Can Heal Your Body into the book we know as You Can Heal Your Life.
Yeah, and you know, certainly I know a lot of people who use this book almost as a dictionary or an encyclopedia when something specific is physically wrong with them. They'll say, oh gosh, you know, I have a pain in my left shoulder. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go to Louise Hayes' book and look it up and say, oh, okay, here's something I need to work on. But Louise meant the book, I think, to be much more holistic,
mm-hmm.
in that it's about, as you were pointing out, healing your life. It's about loving yourself. It's about forgiveness. It's about looking at yourself in the bigger picture as a mind-body-spirit connection and not just a specific pain, for example.
That's right. And, you know, I'll tell you, my father gave me this book when I was in high school.
Gosh, you were so lucky.
I know. I really was. And this was around the time with Saturday Night Live doing the Church Lady skit and the Stuart Smalley skit. You know, do you remember, you don't like Saturday Night Live, but Stuart Smalley was the one who would look in the mirror and go, "You're good enough, you're smart enough, and doggone it, people like you."
Oh, I do know about that.
Okay, so this was during that whole time. And I remember when my dad gave me this book, he was like, "You need to read this." And I kind of looked at all the affirmations, and I thought, there was a part of me, now it's a teenager, and, you know, all I wanted to do was be cool and fit in. So there was a part of me that looked at this book and thought, hell no, I'm not going to stare at myself in the mirror and tell me I love me. I thought it was stupid. It made me uncomfortable. It made me feel awkward. And then in that awkwardness, I started to realize that there was a real gift there. Because if I wasn't comfortable being uncool, quote-unquote, with myself, then there was a problem that I needed to really explore. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
What an insight for a teenager.
Yeah, I hope so. When you're a teenager, you have insights, and then they go. Then they come back around. Which is why this is a book. I always buy a lot of copies of this book.
I can't tell you how many copies of this book I've bought and given away, and they didn't come back to me, and I just buy another one.
Exactly. Yeah, if I'm at a library book sale, or I'm a member of Hay House, and they have wonderful clearance sales, and sometimes this book is on clearance for $5, and I'll buy a couple of copies just to give away, and I always try to reread this book from time to time. And I try to not do what you said so many people do, but I do it too. You know, just flipping to the back of the book and seeing, you know, what this body ache means, what that means. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to sit with the awkwardness. And I'm telling you, for a lot of you who have not read this book, you're going to look at this book and go, what the heck is this? Because she has all these affirmations, you know, that you're supposed to say daily. I listen with love to my body's messages. You know, that's uncomfortable for some of us.
Well, it is. And, you know, Louise has done a movie of this book. And in preparation for today's show, I was on YouTube looking at some of the promo clips for the movie. And in one of them, and I forget who said it, but, you know, it was a cast of very well-known metaphysicians were talking about the book, and somebody said, you know, it isn't enough to just say the affirmations.
Mm-hmm.
What's important is the emotion that comes with the saying that we really need to investigate and sit with and learn from and perhaps shift.
That awkwardness.
Yes.
Yes. You know, and what I find fascinating is she put this book together in 1984, and now, just in the past, what, 5-7 years, they have actually, science has proven that thoughts do affect reality.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I remember seeing the big hoopla that came out a while back about that when we have a broken heart,
mm-hmm.
our physical heart literally breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading that and thinking, well, duh.
Mm-hmm.
I've known that for years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, she has, someone just sent me a research study they did, I love the way I throw around the word they. I don't know who they are, but a bunch of people.
Now we're getting specific.
Did a research study, and they came up with something called the breast cancer personality. Did I tell you about this?
You did tell me about this. Tell our audience
okay,
about it.
So if you look up, I'm trying to flip through in the book now, but if you look up breast cancer in Louise Hayes' book, it talks about, like, smother love, like trying to mother everybody.
Uh-huh.
Okay, seriously, I cannot find it. It's not under breast. Will you look while I'm talking?
I will.
Oh, breast problems. Here it is. Represents mothering and nurturing and nourishment, a refusal to nourish the self, putting everyone else first.
Does that fit people you know with breast cancer, Samantha?
What?
Does that fit people you know with
breast
cancer?
Yes, it does fit people I know with breast cancer. And so that she wrote that in 1984, and they've just come out with this study that literally is called the breast cancer personality, and they have shown that women who tend to put other people first and refuse to practice self-care tend to get breast cancer. Now, they're not saying, they were very careful in this study, they didn't say putting others first, you'll catch breast cancer.
Right.
You know, it's like, but it's like if you have the propensity towards breast cancer and then you take care of everyone else first, you possibly have a better chance of developing breast cancer.
Absolutely. And Louise doesn't deny, nor does science, that our DNA comes in with a propensity for certain illnesses and
yes.
genetic factors and all of that. The point that Louise, I think, makes is that how we cope with those illnesses, how we address them, how we feel about them, makes a huge difference in how we go through the process of having those illnesses.
Exactly. It's all connected, and that's
yes.
what this book shows. And there's a workbook that you can get to accompany this book as well that really does help with the affirmations. But the book helps you to go through physical releasing, emotional releasing, forgiveness. She has really good exercises in here about how to get anger out, how to deal with shame. And, you know, really, I just think it's groundbreaking that she was talking about this 30 years ago. Now we have Brené Brown, who's brought shame into the, you know, limelight, so to speak.
With her TED Talks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was talking about it long before. She is a huge proponent of mirror work, where you literally stand in front of the mirror and you say these affirmations to yourself out loud.
And that's darn hard.
It is.
It's not easy to do.
I try, every time I put my makeup on in the morning, I will always try to say something nice to myself. And to this day, I've been doing this for years, and to this day, I still kind of laugh. Or I'll wink at myself, like, aren't we stupid? Ha, ha, ha. But I do try to do it. She talks about what I think is really important in this book. She talks about the willingness to change. And I really want to talk about that for a minute, because so many people want change in their life, but they don't want to do a darn thing to incorporate that change into their
right.
life. They want everyone else around them to change.
And they want someone else to fix it for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I've a lot of friends who say, well, the doctor says this, so it must be true. My mom was one of those people. My dad was one of those people. And I just want to scream. You know, no, the doctor doesn't always know best.
Yeah. She says the problem, quote unquote, is rarely the problem, meaning what the doctor is telling you is the problem isn't the problem.
Right.
It's the manifestation of the root of the real problem.
Yeah, when I talk to clients about physical ailments, I often say that a physical ailment is our psyche's last-ditch effort to get our attention that something is out of balance.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Our psyche has tried to help us work through a life issue emotionally,
mm-hmm.
and we've ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Tried to help us get through it spiritually, and we've ignored it. We've refused to take spiritual responsibility. And finally, our psyche says, okay, all right, we're going to stop you in your tracks, and here's what's going to happen to your body.
Yeah.
And then we pay attention because we are so connected and grounded in our physicality rather than our spirituality or our emotional beings.
That's right. And what I see with some of the clients I work with is a lot of people who have chronic illness become addicted to being the victim.
Absolutely.
Meaning that, you know, say, for example, someone is suffering with a chronic illness. They get attention from that,
mm-hmm.
which is comforting and needed.
Mm-hmm.
They are able to use that as an excuse, you know, to not facilitate the necessary change. And so even though the body is screaming to them, hey, 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 we need to release that painful stuff that happened in childhood, so I'm going to make you chronically ill until you face that. Even though the body is doing that, the person dealing with the chronic illness is saying, well, this is kind of nice. I get to kind of just pause and take a time out from the world. I don't have to work. I can go on disability. I don't have to deal, you know, with the hardships of getting up every day and going to a job. And then they stay stuck in that stagnant energy.
And it isn't that they say those things to themselves consciously.
No, not at all. In fact, a lot of people with chronic illness might be listening to this and be really mad at me right now for saying
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
And I'm only saying that because, look, there are so many times when I've been sick and I've been like, well, this is kind of nice. You know, I mean, it is nice to give your body that time out. You know what I mean? And to give yourself permission to get the care you need. But I'm speaking from experience. If you have to get sick in order to learn how to take care of yourself, that's the problem, not the sickness.
You know, I remember I have a little book that I've had since the early 1960s that really in some ways was a forerunner of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's by Franz Alexander, and the name of the book is Psychosomatic Medicine. And my father, interestingly, had this book,
mm-hmm.
and I read it, and I thought to myself, why doesn't my father know that this is true? Because my father had chronic illness. Both my parents did.
Mm-hmm.
And yet my father refused to look at that connection. It was, and I'm quoting my dad here, God's will that he have these things wrong with him.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. He believed that.
Sure.
You know, he absolutely believed that without any responsibility to his having co-created those illnesses in his life. And I remember being very angry with my father after I read this book. It's like, well, you can make these shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then I remember thinking, well, okay, if you're going to be mad at your dad about this, what about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I began to realize as a young teenager that if I started my period on a Monday, I had terrible, terrible, terrible cramps. I had to stay home from school and curl up in a ball in my bed. If I started my period on a Friday, they weren't so bad. And even then, and I'm talking, I was 12, 13 years old, that clicked in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got it. And I began to realize that I had some control and choice
yeah.
in what was going to happen to my body.
Yeah.
And as you and I both know, I had an illness scare last year,
mm-hmm.
just about this time. It was last April.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, whoa, what is going on here really?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was able to put together the psychological and emotional component of what was happening to me, I was able to say, nope, I don't believe I choose this. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I made changes in my life that made that very different for me.
Right. But that's something important I want to mention, because I've dealt with serious illness in my life, and as a studier of all of this, dealing with serious illness for me has been really hard, because you can read You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay, and you can take away from that you cause all of your pain.
And I don't want to imply that always.
Right, and that's so bad, because there you are sick, and now you're blaming yourself for being, you know what I mean? It's like this
yeah.
awful cycle. So I want to point out that Deb and I aren't saying everything in your life you've created, because I don't necessarily believe that's true 100%. I do believe we create the life we lead, but some things in life happen, right? And we have to take responsibility for what happens. And we have to always remember that things might happen in life that are kind of crappy and that we wish didn't happen. But what we have to focus on is accepting that reality, and then accepting and empowering ourselves with the reminder that we have choices as to how we deal with it.
Right.
You know, like, okay, you got lupus. Don't focus on the fact that you have lupus because you didn't take care of yourself, because you didn't nurture yourself, because you are enjoying playing the victim card right now. Don't focus on that. Focus on, okay.
Because none of those things may be true. There may be an entirely different reason you have lupus.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so
sorry, I mean it wrong.
Focus on, okay, I have lupus. This really stinks. What can I do about it? Where are my choices? And that's, I think, where the willingness to change comes into play that Louise Hayes talks about.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
Because it's a tricky balance, don't you think, between that self-blame and acceptance?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't always know that it's, I don't think, it's blame so much as it is, or for me, it's understanding the underlying issues.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my psyche's way of choosing to work out my response to those issues. I have a choice as to perhaps coming up with a healthier way
mm-hmm.
to address those issues.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I mean, like, you know, so 2 years ago I dealt with breast cancer. And for me, I was like, I remember saying to my friend, I don't know how to take care of myself to the point that I'm losing body parts. You know, like that was one of our quotes that we laughed at. We are literally losing body parts because we don't know how to put ourselves first. And so I don't want people to read this book or listen to us chatting and take away from this that, you know, you caused this. Maybe I did, maybe you did, maybe I didn't, maybe you didn't. You know, don't focus on that. But focus on what you can do to change this. Does that make sense?
Yes, to focus on what you can do to change it, or to live, sometimes to live with it,
mm-hmm.
in a way that is the best for you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking of people with chronic illness here.
Yeah, me too.
You know.
Okay, we are the Psychic Teachers. This is the Psychic Teachers Book Club. I'm Samantha Fay.
I'm Deb Bowen.
And we're so happy that you're listening to us. If you want to learn more about us, please check out our other podcast that airs every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern called Psychic Teachers. It's in iTunes, and it's also on Blog Talk Radio. We have 5 years of archives that are free for you to peruse and check out.
200 and some shows.
Yep. We are super accessible via email and Facebook. We will enter the 21st century and be available on Instagram and Twitter by the end of the summer, I promise.
Oh, Lord, okay.
Yes, I'm hiring my nephews to set up the
home. I know you told me we were doing this.
But for right now, we're on Facebook, Psychic Teachers, all one word. And you can check us out individually, our services and our products, at SamanthaFay.com, F-E-Y, and DebBowen.com, 2 B's.
Right. I put it in the chat room. And we would love to have you take a look at the services we offer. We offer spiritual coaching. We offer readings. We are both psychics. We have a series of courses available for downloads. We have various products for sale that we think are enhancing for one's life. So we'd appreciate it if you take a look at us and see if what we do resonates for you. We'd be happy to be of service.
And the way we do what we do best is by working with you. So if there's a book you want us to discuss, please shoot us an email or let us know on Facebook. And we're super open to kind criticism. So if we say something and you're like, you know, I just do not agree with that, or I would like for them to consider this other point of view, I would love to hear from you all about that as well. Because sometimes people will send us emails and I'm like, gosh, you know, I never thought of that. So we love to hear constructive criticism, and we all love compliments too. So just keep in contact with us. Let us know how you're doing and what you like about the show and what you don't like.
Absolutely. And, you know, yeah, we're happy to hear from you. Absolutely we are. Okay, Samantha, so Louise had cancer herself.
Yes.
And she, of course, being Louise Hay, saw that as an opportunity to walk her talk.
Yeah.
And she is, what, now in her 90s?
I think so, and she looks like she's 50.
I know.
Beautiful and amazing, and she does walk her talk.
She does. She does. And, you know, she grew up in a horribly abusive family. She was raped. She talks about that in some of her other work.
And she believes that she manifested that pain through vaginal cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so she, when she started, like you said, you know, touting her little book around at Unity Churches, and from that built the empire that is Hay House Publishing today.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a big deal to be in the Hay House stable as a writer and a practitioner.
But for those of you who are listening to this and you're in your 40s and 50s and you're thinking, oh, read her story, because she really writes about how she lived off her beauty and just that whole typical marry a man and let him take care of you. And she was a model, and she married this man, and he divorced her, and she was in her 40s and was, like, broke and didn't know what to do with her life. Mm-hmm. And look at her 40 years later, you know? But if you interviewed her at 45, she would have been like, I have no retirement, I have no career to fall back. She had nothing, and she created all of this out of a journey to learn how to love herself. Right. So I just think it's such a hopeful story about, you know, not ever giving up on yourself and not ever thinking that it's too late to dream. Because she created this empire basically in her late 50s.
Yeah, she did. You know, Samantha, today is the new moon, and Mercury goes retrograde tomorrow. No, don't do that.
All right, sorry.
I know, because everybody does. You know, that's kind of, oh, Mercury's in retrograde, things are going to get bad. And I want to talk about that notion of affirmation and the idea of healing in terms of these two astrological events happening today and tomorrow. And I'm going to blog about that later today. So if you're interested in following my blogs, go to my website and at the bottom of my homepage, sign up to follow my blogs. I promise I don't blow up your email. I do about
one. No, you don't. And you write really informative, precise things that are to the point. You don't go on and on, which is nice, too.
I try not to ramble, but thank you for that. But new moon, and I've seen so much that for me is erroneous on Facebook about the new moon energy. New moon isn't about manifesting. New moon is about setting the intentions to manifest. This is in the dark of the moon, in the silence, in the darkness of tonight, is the time to decide what you want in your life, to begin to make the very first step into creating those changes that you want to happen in your life. So if you're listening to this podcast and the idea of making changes and healing whatever may be happening in your life that needs healing, tonight's a great night to begin that process of setting an intention to make the change.
Now, tell people what that means. Like, does that mean just thinking about it? Does it mean speaking it out loud? Does it mean writing it down? How should
the answer to those questions is yes.
Okay.
To all of them.
Okay.
It is about thinking about it. It is about speaking it out loud. The universe needs to hear it. It is also about writing it down. There's something absolutely magical that happens with that physical connection of writing the words. And our brain beginning to think that whatever we have written can become reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is about, I create crystal grids with setting intentions. It's really about, I mean, there are lots of ways to set intentions.
I'm addicted to buying journals.
Oh, I haven't been thinking of them.
I have a journal, and it says, write it down, make it happen. And so
yeah.
I put my intentions in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have another journal that says the wish list. And it's every page is just, instead of a to-do list, it says the wish list.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the month, like, I'll just kind of jot down wishes that I have.
Mm-hmm.
But on the new moon, I'll go to that green journal I have that says, write it down, make it happen, and I write my intentions in there.
The other piece of this puzzle is that Mercury retrograde, yes, there's all that hype about electronics and stuff, but Mercury retrograde is also a time for reflection.
Yeah.
Where have you been? What do you need to look at and examine and then affect change? So Mercury retrograde and the new moon coming together is a great opportunity to facilitate change. We're going to continue to talk about Louise Hayes, You Can Heal Your Life, next week. We have more to say about it.
And if you want to read along with us after Louise Hayes' book, we're going to be doing 2 weeks on the Four Agreements.
Yeah. So Louise Hay next week, and then the following 2 weeks, the Four Agreements. Thank you so very much for being with us. We are out of time. We appreciate you being with us, and we hope you have a wonderful week.
Take care, everyone. Be the light.
Bye-bye.